Thank you for listening to Opening the Circle. My name is Tiffany, and I'm an ordained minister and the founder of the Open Circle. Our mission is to offer a holy space for all who pray, meditate, grieve, rejoice, and transform. We offer radical hospitality and love to everyone, including ourselves. You're about to listen to a live recording of me offering my weekly reflection to our gathered community. These spiritual reflections are intended to open the circle of contemplative, embodied Christian practice and are embedded in a particular community context and spiritual lineage. And these reflections are also for you, wherever you are coming from as you listen to this podcast. They are for seekers and doubters and those with curious hearts, as well as folks who are firmly rooted in a religious or spiritual tradition or practice. Wherever you are coming from, as you enter this moment that we share, you are welcome here. And I thank you for co-creating this sacred space and helping to open the circle of contemplation together. Thank you for being here, and I hope this offering will be of service in some small way. When he was a young man, the late neurologist Oliver Sacks, who you may know, who wrote many books, met a Hungarian theater director named Jenő one summer and fell madly in love with Jenő. And Sacks wrote letters his whole life. He never wrote emails. Doesn't that sound really nice? And many of his letters were published after his death in collections and books. And so in one of his letters to Jenő, soon after they met, he wrote this: "The weather has been of supernal beauty. The day steeps everything in golden liquid. A sidewalk cafe in the evening with a wonderful amber light flooding through the doors and windows. Huge mad stars in an indigo sky. For this, you have to be great, crazy, or wildly in love. I never saw that golden light before we met in Paris." And Maria Popova, reflecting on these letters that Oliver Sacks wrote to Jenő, says, "He isn't, of course, describing the city as it is, but as he is. This, in the end, may be what love is. The billion lights inside that make the whole world luminous. An inner sun to render every dull surface and every dark space radiant." This transfiguration story that we hear today is about radiance. It's about an inner sun, a billion lights inside, making the world suddenly appear luminous. This story is about a change of perspective. The word transfiguration means to change the way something looks. It doesn't mean that it is fundamentally changed in substance or form. The change is in what is seen. It looks different. So in today's story, Jesus takes the three disciples, Peter, James, and John, with him up a high mountain. Just the four of them, alone, hike up this mountain together to pray. And while they are up there, presumably praying, something spectacular happens, something very strange. The appearance of the face of Jesus changes. It begins to shine, and his clothes become dazzling bright like light. He looks different. He is transfigured before their eyes. And then suddenly he's with two other people, Moses and Elijah, both long dead at the time, two of the greatest prophets in Jewish history, reminding us once again that Jesus is part of a prophetic lineage within the Jewish tradition. He is being met by these prophetic ancestors of his. And then, as Bob said, Peter, always helpful, suggests that they maybe build a dwelling place for each of them. Three tents up on the mountain, one for Elijah, one for Moses, one for Jesus. But as he's still speaking, a bright cloud overshadows them. The disciples are afraid. A voice comes from the cloud and says, "This is my child, my beloved. This is the one to listen to." The disciples fall to the ground in fear. And then Jesus touches them, says, "Get up and don't be afraid." And then this whole astonishing vision ends abruptly. The two older prophetic figures are gone. And then when the disciples look up from their fear, they find themselves with Jesus alone in a kind of stunned silence. And Jesus looks normal again, it seems. There's no cloud, there's no prophetic apparitions, there's no voice coming from the clouds. And they walk back down the mountain, and Jesus tells them not to share what they have seen until after his resurrection. This story is incredible. It's one of my favorite stories in the Bible, really. It's beautiful, it's strange, it's mysterious. But if we see this story as a one-time miracle, maybe a far-off, improbable story, we miss the meaning of this story. Madeline L'Engle wrote about the Transfiguration with some of my favorite words about this story. She wrote, "Suddenly they saw Jesus the way he was, the way he really was all the time, although they had never seen it before. The glory which blinds the everyday eye and so becomes invisible. This is how he was, radiant, brilliant, carrying joy like flaming sun in his hands." Suddenly they saw Jesus the way he was, the way he really was all the time, although they had never seen it before. The way Oliver Sacks writes to his beloved Jeno, "I never saw that golden light before we met in Paris." Although that same scene with golden late day light may have been there 1,000 times before. He may have walked by that same cafe so many times before. The disciples have this mountaintop vision that changes their perspective. It allows them to see something that was already true, that had already been there, but they couldn't see it before. The glory had been invisible to them, the radiance, the brilliance, the joy. And then suddenly they saw it. Their vision was transfigured and they saw something miraculous. As Madeline L'Engle says, they saw the way Jesus really was all along, although they had never seen it before. The golden light that Oliver Sacks describes flooding through doors and windows of a sidewalk cafe in New York on an ordinary evening, and yet he never saw it before. Like Oliver Sacks, before his vision was transformed by love, it seems like these disciples had missed some things along the way. They hadn't really seen Jesus. They hadn't really seen this teacher that they walked with and worked with side by side every day. And when they went up this mountain and took this prayerful walk with him, and paused at the top to look at the world around them, they suddenly saw reality as it really was with new eyes. They suddenly saw that incredible, shimmering, luminescent things were happening in their midst. That light was pouring forth like an inner sun of radiance out of this person who they knew. Like the disciples, we often need a new perspective on the world around us. Maybe we need to find a place or a way or a practice where we can see what's around us differently and reorient ourselves to reality. Whether that's on a mountaintop or in a little patch of sun on a windowsill or on a sidewalk or looking up at the sky, changing our perspective can help us to see the beauty and the splendor of God that was already there, that's been shining all along, that is already here right now in this exact moment. But we all know that it's not always easy to see with new eyes. Sometimes there is a bit of chance or serendipity involved. Although to see with transfigured eyes is a possibility that we can cultivate through practice and intention as well. The 20th century paleontologist, anthropologist, and philosopher of science, Loren Isley, wrote about it this way. He said, "The time has to be right. One has to be, by chance or intention, upon the border of two worlds. And sometimes these two borders may shift or interpenetrate, and one sees the miraculous." One has to be by chance or by intention at the border of two worlds, and sometimes we see the miraculous. Sister Joan Chittister says that to be holy demands that we slow down and live in the moment that we're in. When we do that, we come to see the face of God. Which also echoes one of my favorite quotes from Mary Oliver. "Attention is the beginning of devotion." So maybe we have something to learn from the disciples in this story. When we slow down, when we actually live in the moment we are in, when we find ourselves by chance or intention upon the border of worlds, when we bring our full attention to this moment, we might also see the face of God shining the way it really is all the time. We might witness the miraculous. We can see things that we've missed when we've been preoccupied or in autopilot or rushing along from one thing to the next or frustrated and stressed. Like the disciples, maybe when we pause, slow down, reorient, we begin to see the beauty, the splendor of God that's been shining all along. The miraculous world that is shimmering all the time in our peripheral vision, the border of which is always close by. Walt Whitman wrote in his poem, Miracles, "Why, who makes much of a miracle? As to me, I know nothing else but miracles. Whether I walk the streets of Manhattan or dart my sight over the roofs of houses toward the sky or wade with naked feet along the beach just in the edge of the water or stand under trees in the woods or talk by day with anyone I love or sleep in the bed at night with anyone I love or sit at table at dinner with the rest. To me, every hour of the light and dark is a miracle. Every cubic inch of space is a miracle. To me, the sea is a continual miracle. The fishes that swim, the rocks, the motion of the waves, the ships with men in them, what stranger miracles are there? As to me, I know nothing else but miracles. What stranger miracles are there? When we slow down, when we are present, when we pay attention, when we open our eyes, we might begin to glimpse the golden, radiant light that's pouring out of every window and shining in the face of every person, in the face of Jesus, in every cubic inch and every hour. Our attention is the beginning of our devotion. And if we think of our attention this way, as the root of devotion, that this golden light is already pouring through those cafe windows and a billion lights are already shining in the New York skyline, and Jesus was already radiant, brilliant, carrying joy like flaming sun in his hands, as Madeleine L'Engel says, and the disciples had just never seen it before, the importance of this story becomes more clear. This is not just a strange, miraculous tale from long ago. This is a reminder of how to live our lives in the midst of the difficult, complex realities of life. This is a reminder that what we pay attention to in this beautiful and heartbreaking world shapes our lives entirely. Just before today's story, Jesus has shared with the disciples that he is going to die, that he will suffer, that he will die, and then he will rise again. And so Jesus is about to give from the heart to journey into the shadows of death in order to shine in the darkness, in order to scatter the shadows and show us this shimmering light that flows through every single thing in the cosmos. Jesus is about to go into the depths of suffering and death in order to bring us all into renewed intimacy with God, the kind of intimacy that was familiar to the prophets that he meets up there on the mountaintop. Moses, whom the book of Deuteronomy describes as knowing God face to face, and his own face shining like the sun after that encounter with God face to face, and Elijah, who heard God in the sound of sheer silence. And the kind of intimacy that Jesus also experiences with God, the one whom God calls my beloved child. The intimacy of love, of presence, and devoted attention. That is what Jesus wants us to experience. That is what he gives of himself for us to experience. And this week we begin this 40-day journey of Lent leading us to Easter, leading to that mystery of new life in the face of death. And as we begin this sacred season of Lent, we transition from these stories of light of the Epiphany season. I invite us to take this story with us, this mysterious, perspective-changing light of Christ. Let us bring that on this journey of Lent. As we go into this season, let us be brave enough to see in new ways, to slow down and pay attention, to allow our attention to be devotional, to open ourselves to the intimacy and presence that Christ desires for us, to be willing to be transformed by what we see and experience. What we pay attention to shapes our lives and changes our world in tangible ways. The ecologist and writer Rachel Carson wrote, "Those who dwell among the beauties and mysteries of the earth are never alone or weary of life. Those who contemplate the beauty of the earth find reserves of strength that will endure as long as life lasts." The more clearly we can focus our attention on the wonders and realities of the universe, she said, the less taste we shall have for destruction. And so this story of transfiguration and shining radiance is not spiritual fluff. The stakes are very high for what we pay attention to. As Carson said, the more clearly we can focus our attention on the wonders and the realities of the universe, the less taste we will have for destruction. Maybe when we begin to see the beautiful face of God shining in our neighbors, when we see all of our siblings shining with the light of Christ, when we see the light that is pouring from the mountaintops and the windows and the miracles of the sea, we might begin to act in accordance with that truth, transforming injustice into justice and scarcity into plenty and fear into love. Our story ends with this voice thundering down from the clouds, repeating the words of the baptism of Jesus. "This is my beloved. This is my child." The clouds clear away. The disciples see nothing anymore, nothing unusual, just Jesus standing there, same as ever. And they walk down the mountain, and they don't tell anyone what they have seen. And as strange as this story is, it's ultimately a story of hope, because it shows us that no matter how afraid we might be, how unaware we might be, how uncomfortable we might be with uncertainty, how much we may be missing by not paying attention, how numb we may have become to the miracles of the world around us, with courage, with love, with presence, perhaps with a bit of chance or serendipity, it is possible to see reality with new eyes, to see what's really here, to witness a dazzling world and inhabit a radiant life, to see the world in transfigured ways and to be transformed by that.
Stars at night, it is so cliche to say that nothing feels right. I was born under a four-leaf clover, and still I'm always at an edge, craning my neck to see over. To finally look you in the eye, I will do my my best to plant a garden with seeds that I can never know if they'll grow up to become flowers. Become flowers. Become flowers.
You've been listening to Opening the Circle, a podcast supported by the Open Circle, a Disciples of Christ community located in Santa Fe, New Mexico, on Indigenous Tewa land. We are a humble community of seekers dedicated to the revolutionary message of Jesus Christ, to love and serve all. To learn more, visit our website at theopencirclesantafe.org. We want to thank the Open Circle for supporting this podcast, you for listening, Elizabeth Fagan for creating and sharing original music, and Kirsten Rudberg for editing and producing the podcast. Thanks again. Until next time.